Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Park, and you are welcome to episode number 63. So, folks, first off, I want to say a happy new year to everybody. We are obviously in some challenging times, and I'm hoping you guys are staying safe and well, and hopefully we'll be able to give you some respite from the madness tipping around with our episode today. Today, guys, I got a chance to talk to the very excellent Fiona Cashmere. Fiona is a personal trainer and strength and conditioning coach based in Galway. She's got some really, really great ideas, and it was great to talk to her today. Hopefully you guys enjoy the show, and I'll chat to you soon.
All right, folks, so welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Park, and we are up on episode number 63, folks. So thanks again for joining us, everybody. Today, guys, I'm joined by a fantastic coach, Fiona Cashmere. Fiona, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Park. It's good to finally get on. I know we've been talking about it for quite a while.
Exactly. Yeah. So this has been, I actually looked back at some of the old messages and I was like, I think this is like maybe August or so when we kind of started touching base about this.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
So I was like, so it's great to have you on. Fiona, so could you talk a little bit about your background and I suppose kind of how you got into coaching, but like even more so about your kind of maybe I always talk about I have two coaching careers. I have a CrossFit coaching career and then I have like a previous like life of normal coaching, like all these other kind of mad things. You have also got a previous life towards your coaching, essentially. So could you talk a little bit about that and just give us some background on if you could?
Yeah, for sure. So I'd say my background is a little kind of atypical. So I grew up in Sydney, Australia. I moved out very young. I moved out around 16-ish. I actually became a chef. I was a chef for about 7 years, traveled around a bunch of countries. The way that I ended up in the fitness industry was when I arrived in Canada. At this point, I was 22. So I ended up getting a job as a receptionist in a gym. Anyone that knows anything about chefing or has been a chef or has been in the hospitality industry knows that it's kind of one of these jobs that unless you're very passionate about it, it's awful. So I decided I would take a break. And the break was only meant to be temporary. Keep in mind, at this stage, I had never been in a gym. I was probably drinking on the daily. Again, like you talk about a past life, it couldn't be more contradictory to what I do now. So I got a job in a gym and I just fell in love with it. So there was one kind of main influence that I had, which was a bodybuilder that worked in there. And I just thought she was fucking sick. I'd never really seen a bodybuilder before, and it almost didn't really occur to me as like a way of life and something that I could do. And I thought she was brilliant, and she really, you know, took the time to kind of show me the ropes and teach me what she knew, which I'm very grateful for, because I can see now how annoying that would have been for her. So anyway, she showed me the ropes and I ended up getting a few different certifications through the ISSA, so the International Sports Science Association. About a year or so in, I ended up doing my first fitness competition. I'd use that term very loosely. I really wasn't very committed to it at all. But, you know, I thought I'd give it a go. And I think it was a nice entry into doing fitness competitions, because anyone that knows about them knows that they're fairly intense. So it's nice to have that kind of integrated exposure, I suppose. So I began competing in fitness competitions. I didn't do amazingly in the first couple, but like I said, I wasn't very committed. I can remember actually the first one that I did. I was speaking to one of the girls backstage, and she was like, "Oh man, it's been like 6 months since I had a drink." And I kind of turned around and was like, "Man, I was still drinking last night. I think I'm still drunk right now." So yeah, not super committed, but yeah, it was nice to have it integrated that way. So yeah, so it stuck with the fitness competitions, and I still do those. So it kind of got to the point where, you know, I was working as a PT there, and my visa was going to be up in Canada, and I had to make a decision about what I was going to do next. So I had actually lived in Ireland once before. I think I've lived in 6 countries in total. I get bored fairly handy. So at the time I was with a boyfriend who's from Mayo, and he actually studied at GMIT. So I was looking at going into college, and sports science seemed like a good avenue to go down. Now, keep in mind, I actually hadn't finished high school, and I think I was a problem child at that stage, to say the least. So I think even when I left school in year 10, I didn't get particularly good grades. So I started emailing GMIT to see if that might be a possibility. I can live in Europe, seeing as I'm actually a Polish citizen. My grandparents were Polish and Scottish. So I contacted Lisa Ryan, who is the head of natural sciences at GMIT. And so we started emailing back and forth, and I went over there and I met with her, and it seemed like a really good idea. So I applied for the sports science course. Now, my visa was actually up in Canada before I had heard back from GMIT. So at that point, I was kind of moving on a whim. I'm not entirely sure what I would have done if I didn't get in. Yeah, I'm pretty ballsy that way. So I'm sure I would have figured something else out. So anyway, I moved over. I did end up getting in. Ended up getting a job at Planet Health, which is where I work now, in the Galway Shopping Centre. So I work there, and I do my PT out of there as well. So I'm still studying sports science at GMIT. I'm in my third year now. I'll likely continue to do the master's, possibly in strength and conditioning. However, as I've spoken to you about before, I'm kind of still a little torn. When it comes down to it, I'd say my true passion is really muscle hypertrophy science. So I'm still torn as to whether I'll do the master's maybe in sports science and continue to go down that route, maybe into research or something like that. I'd like to do a PhD as well, but we'll see how that goes. Or whether I'd go down more the strength and conditioning route, which is how it seems to be going at the moment. And I only seem to be getting offered more and more of that stuff. So we'll kind of take it as it goes, I suppose. So at the beginning of the lockdown, I kind of got a bit of a notion. You know what? Actually, it stemmed from listening to your podcast with Andrea Hoody. Oh, no. I listened to that podcast that you did with her, and I looked her up on Instagram, and I'm like, man, she's so cool. If you don't know Andrea Hoody, you should look her up. She's freaking brilliant. Like, yeah, she's such a rock star, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely.
A strength and conditioning coach for the Texas Longhorns over in the US. And, you know, watching the way that she interacts with her athletes, it's just really inspiring. And, yeah, she's very cool. So I kind of thought that I might have a bit of a look at it. I really was never a very sporty child. So I guess the idea of going into strength and conditioning, despite the fact that I am awful at sports, which is why I compete in physique competitions, which I'm still not quite sure, is it a sport or not? I have had this debate many a time. I'm not completely sure. But I kind of like to be left alone to do my own training. I don't work particularly well in a team, which is like fairly contradictory to the fact that I actually like coaching teams. So I don't know how that works, but it seems to. But yeah, so at the start of the lockdown, I started sitting in on, you know, a lot of these seminars and conferences, and got into the group that we were speaking about before, which we're both still a part of. Yeah. With a lot of brilliant practitioners. It's very humbling being part of a group like that. So then I actually had a bit of a notion to go around and meet with a bunch of these coaches. I traveled to Dublin, where I met up with Quiva, who you've had on your podcast mm-hmm. before. And yeah. Quiva is just amazing. She's so hardworking, which really resonates with me, because, you know, I'd say if nothing else, you know, I am a very hard worker, and I really kind of gel, well, I think I gel well with Quiva. And so I went to Dublin, I went to Limerick, Cork, and I met up with a bunch of these coaches, and they're all so generous with their time, and yeah, it was a really pleasant experience meeting them all. So Quiva actually ended up setting me up with a strength and conditioning position, which is one I'm still doing currently. So I'm doing strength and conditioning. I'm the coach of the under-18s Girls Corinthians team, rugby team, and I've started doing a bit of work with the under-16 and the under-14s team as well, actually. And they're a really great, great bunch of girls. They're just such natural athletes. You know, I'm always in awe of how quickly they catch on and how well they work as a team. And yeah, they're just brilliant athletes. And it was a really good way to experience strength and conditioning for the first time with those girls.
Awesome.
But yeah, and now I've actually been asked to do some stuff with the GAA teams and stuff as well. So I'll ride the wave as long as it has me, and and I'll see how it goes, I suppose.
Sweet.
But I'm definitely enjoying it, yeah.
Awesome. So you've taken all of my questions, Fiona, you fecker. They're all gone.
That's all I have for.
No, that's good.
Five minutes for you.
We got more. No. So now we start to dig, which is great. So okay, let me see. So without getting too private, obviously, I'm curious about a few different things. So first off, how it go? Like, I think it's just a normal, it's a, like you mentioned, you had an atypical entry point, I suppose, into fitness and S&C in general, and coaching. So first thing, I suppose, when you were doing the chefing, were you mentoring quite a bit, and were you already in that kind of mindset of like coaching people, or did you have some coaches when you were younger, or even when you were that problem child, that might have actually just inadvertently kind of got you into that that kind of coaching vibe or coaching mindset? Can you talk a little bit about that maybe?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm definitely of the opinion that no education is wasted education, and the same for experience. So, you know, so yeah, like I mentioned, I moved out of home very young. I was the classic problem child in every way. I moved out of home and I didn't really have any particular skills or anything that I was into, unless you count party. So yeah, moved out, saw in the newspaper, because back then, you know, people still looked for jobs in newspapers. Saw in the newspaper apprentice chef, and I was like, oh yeah, I can do that. Mm-hmm. I've never been particularly girly. Anyone that knows me knows that I'm a bit of a tomboy. So the idea of like working in a male dominated trade certainly piqued my interest. So I went through my apprenticeship and I graduated quite early, I suppose. I graduated from culinary school before a lot of people would have finished their high school education, so before I was 18. And I actually had my first head chef job at 19. Through my apprenticeship, I did have one head chef who I stuck with for the majority of my apprenticeship. I don't know whether he was necessarily the best influence on me in a lot of ways. However, I certainly did end up a very hard worker. Sure. I got my first head chef job at 19. I think at the time I would have been the youngest head chef in Melbourne. That job was head chef of a 250-seater Greek restaurant on Chapel Street. I almost killed myself doing that job. I would stay overnight in the kitchen. I would average probably about 100 hours a week. So I would stay overnight prepping the food, trying to kind of get a head start on everything, trying to kind of make a name for myself, I suppose. Now the thought of going into strength and conditioning, clearly I'm a sucker for punishment. So, you know, lots of work for not much pay. Yeah, yeah. So I guess you can say that's a transfer. Obviously I had, you know, a lot of people working for me, and I think your management style is always going to be kind of trial and error. Like the head chef that I was under during my apprenticeship, he was a pretty angry guy, to be honest. And when I first got my head chef job, I would have been that way. But then you realize that people generally don't respond very well to that. I think realizing that my management style really isn't that way, and giving people as much autonomy as you can is generally the best way to get people to respond well to you. There was definitely a transfer for sure. Like I said, a lot of work, like very hard work ethic, and very ballsy as well. You know, yeah, which I don't think is a bad thing either. I'm not easily put off. Because even at that stage, you know, being a 19-year-old female head chef, I had men in their 30s working for me. So definitely gives you thick skin anyway, which I think is a good quality to have in general, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose that kind of leads on to your work, like at your first kind of start in the gym as a receptionist, and even your dealings with that lady as a fitness competitor or bodybuilder, I suppose, do you put a lot of that down to just recognizing that level of hard work in somebody in an athletic sense for that person or that lady, and just kind of really resonating with it and going, okay, do you know what? This is actually, I was working really, really hard in chefing. I can see a space where I could work really, really hard and even not necessarily see more fruits from your labor, but see literally physically much more change, a better level of earning rather than decreasing in value. We'd say with the likes of chefing. So like you get ground into the ground, like it's like you, and you would reach a fantastic point as a head chef, but like with that comes, like you mentioned, considerable amount of challenges when it comes to hours or stress levels or whatever. Was that one of the reasons why someone like her just like look and that whole world looked so much more attractive? Because you were already quite hardworking, and then you found another avenue to let that hard work kind of dig in?
Well, I think to me, like passion is kind of the defining factor, you know yourself when you find something that you're very passionate about, that work ethic will go further. Mm-hmm. You know, because I knew a lot of people like that from chefing as well. You know, I didn't know the difference because I'd never tried anything else. So I didn't really know that I wasn't passionate about it, until I experienced, you know, the fitness industry, I suppose.
Yeah.
And even, you know, my entry into bodybuilding, you know, I could see, I think seeing the visual representation of your hard work was the draw for bodybuilding for me. You know, you can see it in your physique, despite the fact, yeah, I mean, the first couple of competitions, I certainly could have put a bit more work in. But I mean, I think that takes time too. Also being someone that's not particularly genetically gifted, I think there is a bit of a threshold where you can make up for that to a certain extent. Now, I don't know that I'll ever be an IFBB pro bodybuilder. I don't know would I rule it out. I'm kind of starting to get somewhere with it now. So I suppose you never know. But yeah, I think seeing the physical representation of that hard work was really appealing to me. And yeah, I mean, then I think it's just amazing when you can see, especially like, you know, working in rugby now, seeing these young girls that are genetically gifted, and then seeing them put in the hard work as well, like that's savage, and that's someone that can really get somewhere. And that's an application where your programming and what you do for them will really make a difference, because, you know, it's very possible that some of these girls will end up playing on national team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. As in, well, you're absolutely correct. Like that physical representation is a huge draw, and it's a huge way of, I suppose, consolidating the level of passion that you might have or the levels of interest that you might have in it to begin with. But when it comes to, I suppose, the like you mentioned, you weren't a spectacularly kind of, I suppose, athletic younger person. And did you find it difficult to get into it then, or was it a case of like the first couple of months you were like, oh my god, this is great, let's get stuck in? Just because you were so used to the either putting the hours in, or I suppose, was there, we go back a little bit, was there much of a shift to get into chefing, as in like from the partying? Was it just a case of like, to make sure you could continue partying, you went and got chefing kind of going to make sure you could kind of balance a bit of both?
Well, if anyone knows, you know, anyone that is a chef,
yeah,
generally they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I don't know, is it necessarily typically in a healthy no. way. I think it's just it's a very kind of anti-social job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're kind of working while everyone else is out enjoying themselves. And you know, there is a lot of addiction, and I think people do end up you know, and now it's a chicken or egg situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it the psychologically damaged people go into the hospitality industry, or does the hospitality industry cause the psychological damage? I'm not sure.
I'm aware, but no, I'm with you on that. I'm with you
on that. I'm not sure, but at the time it suited me.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can look back on it, and I think it would be very easy, you know, for me to say, oh, geez, like I wish I'd gotten into this first, but you know, is maybe I wouldn't have had the work ethic then.
Yeah.
So maybe that wouldn't have worked so well. As well, the fact that I was so untalented at every sport that I tried. My mum might say otherwise.
Yeah.
But I guess she kind of has to, doesn't she?
We'll stay there for a sec. So I think, and this probably comes back to, this is a whole other world we could get into, but I think it's the, like you mentioned earlier on, about some of the girls that you coach at the moment, and you're getting offered like more and more positions and more kind of work within that field, which is predominantly a male dominated field in general. Bodybuilding to an extent, I suppose, also would be somewhat male kind of dominated, maybe potentially a little more balanced than we'd say the S&C kind of world at the moment. Now, don't get me wrong, this is just like we'd say the N equals one of Ireland or whatever it is, you know what I mean? Not compared to lots of places around the world, but in general. So with that in mind, I suppose it comes back an awful lot to the empowerment of either female coaches, female athletes, females and males as themselves, like you and yourself. Like you're, like you say, you don't necessarily think you were massively athletic, but you're probably, lots of other people may have thought that you were. But none of us are able to know that at the time, if that makes sense. We're not able to respect it. Whereas now, with say the likes of the coaching you're doing, you're able to recognize those types of girls and those types of people, and be able to encourage them at that younger age makes a huge difference to their potential.
For sure. And I mean, what I do wish is that I had someone, this is the thing, right? As cheesy as it sounds, I wish I did have someone like me back then, yeah. You know, being a positive influence that way. I do wish that I'd got into weight training earlier on. But you know, I just didn't have that influence in my life. You know, yeah. My parents, you know, they're physically active, but they wouldn't be that way inclined. So, you know, even getting the girls on the team into the gym, which is a luxury for an under 18s, especially a girls team.
Yeah.
I'd say they're the only under 18s team, you know, really getting into the gym and doing strength and conditioning that way. Even to be honest with you, even a lot of the senior men's teams don't end up getting into the gym. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly like to be the best influence that I can on them that way. And I think in saying that too, growing up the way that I did, it's and you know how I was at that age, it's made me very empathetic to a lot of these younger girls who, you know, maybe they are doing a bit of partying, or maybe it seems like, you know, they're not working as hard as they could. But you know, I understand that, and I think maybe they just don't have the right influence. So that's the thing. I mean, this is a large component of it too, just being a good influence on these young girls, because you know yourself, I can't even imagine the problems I had at that age, then compound that with social media and everything that the world is now. So, you know, I kind of try my best to be a good influence that way too, and keep them grounded and let them know that they do have all this potential, and then I'll certainly do my best to bring that out in them. And, you know, I tell them, you know, there's no stupid questions. They can ask me whatever they like. You know, I'm an open book. They can message me whenever they like. They can message me on Instagram. They can do whatever they want, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm always there for whatever they need. Sometimes it's difficult to get these things out of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they know that they can, and hopefully that's productive for them.
And have you found, I suppose, what has their reaction been to you as a coach? Like, has some of them really, really bought into you? I suppose, like you mentioned, you would be potentially a little bit of like a tomboy or something like that. So rather than, does that come into the kind of factoring of their reaction to you? Or is it just a case of they see a strong woman and they're like, okay, this is interesting. This is a really inspiring thing, you know? What's been your kind of, I suppose, the reactions to your coaching style and your way of kind of working?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. The idea of being a strength and conditioning coach for an under 18s girls team, I did find it a bit daunting at first. I did find the idea a bit daunting because, I mean, I've always worked in male dominated trades. I live with guys. I worked with guys for the majority of my life. I only have a brother. I don't have any sisters.
Yeah.
I don't really have that many female friends. So I don't really have any, to be honest. It's just the way that I am, and it's just the way that I've you know, it's just how it's happened. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping that I would be able to relate to them, because I thought that might become an issue. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, it's just not a demographic that I've spent a lot of time around.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that it is rugby has made a huge difference. Because these girls, for the most part, they are tomboys, you know, and they are hard workers. Honestly, yeah, for the most part, like, you can't push them hard enough. In the gym, they only want to put more weight on. you know, it's which is fabulous. And yeah, I really appreciate their attitudes. And I hope that, you know, I hope that I'm a good influence on them that way as well. But yeah, I mean, they're great that way. And I mean, in saying that, you know, I do a bit of work with the men's team as well. I work, you know, do bits and pieces with the Our Ladies Boys senior yeah. men's team. So I do bits and pieces with them too. And I thought going into it that would be very preferential for me working with the senior men's team, especially, you know, going back to chefing and even working in the gym mainly with men that age range. It's typically more comfortable for me, but to be honest with you, I wouldn't say I really have a preference. If I did, I'd probably prefer the girls because I feel like I can do more with them. It might be more the age range. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that they are under 18s. I feel like I can have more of an impact on them that way, and they're not as set in their ways. But it worked out really well. But I was a bit concerned about it at first. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
No. Well, that's interesting, I suppose, because I mean, something just kind of came to my head there. But we talked a little bit about the social media pressures earlier on, and I kind of think, like, I agree. Don't get me wrong. I think the social media pressures are pretty serious. At the moment and in general at the last few years, and they will be for the next few years. But I think they can have a positive as well. Like you mentioned about the hardworking kind of attitude, because of the general, I suppose, improved interest in women's sport and in women's training in general, like, and even like, I suppose the general interest towards S&C for women and how to improve performances, I suppose on a more general level in overall, that comes a lot of the time though because of the actual amount of exposure social media has given to improved S&C, the benefits of it, and then also seeing, I suppose, like we see it ourselves all the time. We scroll through Instagram stories or something like that, and we see another ad comes up, and it's somebody else doing a little HIIT workout in their Gymshark gear, or some guy with his sleeves out and the whole lot, and it, like, they're just bouncing around. But I think, and there's also a lot of it going towards like GA or towards rugby or whatever it is, depending on what you're following or what Facebook is following us or whatever it is. But the main thing is, I suppose, there's a challenge obviously with social media, but there is a huge amount of benefit, especially for that age group. Like that age group, I have no doubt, are on it probably a lot more than we're on social media. And if they have a particular sport interest, then yeah, they might be really prone to going, okay, do you know what, I can actually find a lot more, or else they can at least, I suppose, feel a bit more interested in pushing themselves to get more and more empowered, because the whole general mentality at the moment is about improving the visibility of women in sport and the invisibility of I suppose women in society in general. So I don't know what your thoughts on that might be. I don't know, is that correct or incorrect? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's certainly a threshold, and I think that it's also very circumstantial. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on your perspective going into it too, I suppose. So, I mean, I think from a bodybuilding standpoint, I think that social media has had a lot to do with, you know, like bodybuilding, especially for women, has gained popularity hugely in the last, you know, let's say five or 10 years. And you can see that with, you know, a lot of these federations have actually been integrating, you know, new categories to suit, you know, different body types and stuff like that, which is brilliant. However, I suppose, like I said, I think there's kind of a threshold to it in the way that it can also be very daunting. You know, for example, you know, you look at, you know, people around you and you might think you're in a pretty good position, whether it be, you know, in terms of your skill level or in terms of your physique or, you know, or whatever component of fitness is important to you. But, you know, I think that social media has really shone a light on how many people are just as good or if not better than you at it, which I mean, and I mean, again, like I said, I think that's circumstantial and it depends on what that means to you. I think it can be motivating for some, and then for others, I think it can be very daunting. So yeah, I mean, I think it can have a positive and negative impact. And I think that's a rabbit hole in itself.
Yeah. No.
I don't necessarily encourage a lot of time to be spent on social media. And if you have a look at my social media platforms, they're probably a bit different to what like other fitness competitors might be posting. Mm-hmm. I try my best to keep mine, keep it fairly PG, best I can, for someone who competes in a physique sport. Try to keep it informational and try to keep it positive.
Yeah.
And because I think there's a lot of people on there that, I mean, of course, I don't think anyone's going out there. Well, I don't think anyone goes out there to cause harm.
No.
But, you know, I do try to have an awareness of the fact that, I'm sure these girls do, you know, the girls that I train and other young girls in that demographic do visit my Instagram page. Mm-hmm. So I try to make sure that it's not going to make anyone feel, you know, uncomfortable and try to kind of keep things positive and yeah.
So I've got a few different questions now. Let me see where we start. The first one anyways, we'll go, we kind of stick with the bodybuilding actually, if that's okay, and the physique. So you have a significant interest in hypertrophy or hypertrophy science in particular. Is there a particular origin to that, or is it, was there any particular like person that drew your interest to hypertrophy in particular, or is it just a part of it that you think is a part of like in general bodybuilding that's somewhat underestimated, so it requires a bit more understanding and a bit more awareness?
Yeah, so I guess when I first got into the fitness industry, that was the component of fitness that really kind of sparked my interest. I think, to be honest with you, and a friend, a childhood friend, actually pointed it out to me a few years later, and I was like, yeah, that is true. She said to me, like, once I started, you know, building a bit of lean mass and doing the competition, she's like, yeah, your outside finally matched your inside. I was like, yeah, that's true. That's true. So yeah, I am very interested in muscle hypertrophy science. So like I said, that's kind of why I am still a little bit torn with the S&C stuff, but we'll see how it goes. So when I first started researching muscle hypertrophy, one of the first guys that I started listening to was Dr. Jacob Wilson, who works a lot with bodybuilding.com, and he has his own institute called the ASPE over in the US. So one of the things that I heard him say initially, which I thought was very interesting, was that, you know, bodybuilding, you know, mainly as a physique sport, is kind of like the ultimate dichotomy, because your body either wants to be in this like anabolic or catabolic state, right? So the idea of building all of this lean mass and then getting absolutely shredded, yeah, it is just really like this huge contradiction to human physiology, and in particular for women. You know, it's really not what your body wants to be doing. So I started researching mechanisms of muscle hypertrophy, and recently that actually led to me getting very into the blood flow restriction training, which I think anyone that knows me knows that I really did go down that rabbit hole. So yeah, like regarding like different mechanisms of hypertrophy and stuff, so You've got three primary mechanisms. So you've got the mechanical tension, the metabolic stress, and you've got muscle damage. Then you've got all these secondary mechanisms and signaling pathways that underpin those primary mechanisms. So you've got mechanotransduction, you've got like fiber recruitment, cell swelling, you know, increased like hormone production, damage to the myofibers, and I just thought it was all just absolutely fascinating. Especially, I think to me it was just it was so odd to me that something academic had actually sparked my interest. Because, you know, I am like a high school dropout, you know, so this was the first time that anything academic really ever appealed to me. So I started, you know, listening to guys, you know, like Brad Schoenfeld, who, in my opinion, would be, you know, the most prominent muscle hypertrophy researcher. Before Brad Schoenfeld came around, there really wasn't much research being done to it at all because, you know, people have said as well, you know, muscle hypertrophy is kind of like the bastard child of, you know, all the other research being done. You know, people are interested in stuff like, you know, rate of force development and whatnot. And muscle hypertrophy was just kind of like a side product, yeah. You know? I just found it absolutely fascinating. And, you know, I attended one of his seminars in Dublin, I was going to say last year, but I don't know how long I've been in my room.
It would have been
for
the year before.
I've been in my room for a year. So I guess it was probably 2 years ago now. But he's brilliant. Guys like Mike Israetel and Eric Helms and these kind of lads are just doing some brilliant work. And if you look at what was going on 10 years ago, there was none of this. No. So I think the thing that I find really appealing about muscle hypertrophy is that, you know, in comparison to the research that's been done into a lot of these other components of fitness, it's relatively new. Mm-hmm. And I suppose an aspect of that as well is the fact that there's probably not as much money behind it, you know, because tech, you know, for the most part, you know, the money going through these athletic teams and stuff, you know, muscle hypertrophy isn't going to have that kind of funding.
Yeah.
However, because of things like social media and more people competing in fitness competitions and whatnot, and the way that the fitness industry is going, it is starting to receive more funding. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot more research being into as well. So yeah, I'd say it really probably is my passion. But yeah, we'll see how that goes.
No, but it, like, that's excellent. I suppose one small thing straight away that resonated with me that I picked up on there was, so I may or may not be correct in it, but something like that, which is quite complicated, it can be very, very deep, hypertrophy science, like it can be quite detailed, and like you mentioned, it can that's a rabbit hole that you could completely go down, and you could be learning and learning and building on things for years and years to come. But it's things like that like maybe complex enough type of things that you may not have, I suppose, in school, we'd say, for example, one of the reasons possibly why you left school, or maybe, well, like I'm again, words in your mouth potentially, but the potential amount of challenge in school or the interest in school may not have been sufficient enough, whereas something like just not interesting enough, whereas something like hypertrophy or something like chefing, they're big challenges and they require a huge amount of learning. So and like, you're a very well-spoken person, so it shows that there's a huge amount of underlying intelligence in yourself and in all of us, that once we find exactly what once we kind of follow a bit of passion, I know there's a book that says don't follow your passion whatsoever, but I'm like, kind of into the passion a bit as well. But I don't know, does that make any sense that you are, because of where you're at now, I suppose, general age-wise and the whole lot, you're much more interested in the learning of really, really challenging things. It's the kind of whole concept of flow.
Yeah, I mean, I like you said, I mean, it's nothing that ever really occurred to me. And to be honest with you, Parag, it's even in my sports science course now, I wouldn't be surprised if half my course doesn't know what hypertrophy is. and if I knew that going into it, I don't know whether I would have gone into this particular course. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy it either way. But like I said, it really is the bastard child of, you know, these other components of fitness.
Completely, yeah.
It's kind of like, well, you know, people might look at hypertrophy in relation to strength because, of course, there's going to be like some kind of correlation. But, you know, it's fairly rarely that people look at hypertrophy on its own, especially when it comes to these sports science courses. And certainly not certain, you know, it's nothing you would learn about in school biology or physiology, or not that I did. You know, now in saying that, I may not have been paying attention. so don't hold me to that either, because that's very possible. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, one of my clients actually asked me that a while ago, because she's 19 now, and she, you know, we're talking about going to college, and I think a lot of people do rush into it. Like I said, I regret the fact that I was a chef for 7 years. Before I went into this, because to be honest with you, I don't know whether I really would have had the attention span to get into science the way that I do now. I mean, now I don't even have Netflix, or, you know, I read a lot of research and listen to a lot of podcasts, and it genuinely is what I enjoy doing with my time. Between training, eating and reading, I don't really do anything else now. I do eat 7 times a day, and and I do sometimes train for 3-hour intervals. So that's at least half my day gone just there. But it's really true. Like, I think what you're saying, sometimes it takes a while to find what you're really passionate about, because sometimes it wouldn't actually occur to you earlier on. You know, if I had actually just gone into, you know, finished high school and gone into college, who knows what I would have studied. To be honest with you, at that point, I don't know what I would have got the marks to study.
Yeah.
Like, who would have let me into college? I don't know.
Yeah. So
I had to harass the head of department even at 27 to get me in. So
well, you're in now, so that's the main
thing. I'm in now, so it's too late. You can't take that back.
Deal with this. So all right, couple more things before I let you go. So there's let me see now. Okay, so I'm gonna go back to working with the teams that you're working with at the moment. Now, over the last couple of years, I suppose, has there been any particular, or even with your time with those particular teams, or even within the college setting, have you seen any particular changes, or any areas where there is a significant amount of weakness, or a need for investment, or a need for improved awareness in, be it underage S&C coaching, be it with the men's teams, things like that? Is it the actual coaching, I suppose, the art of coaching, or has it been like, and the communication element that might be, that needs work? Or is it actually just the amount of time that, like you mentioned, some of those young girls need for athletic development? Is there areas like that that you've kind of seen over the last while that need more addressing, and there are things that coaches could keep an eye out for and really focus on?
Well, I'm going to be able to give you a better answer to that, I would say, in the next couple of weeks, once I really start getting stuck in with the GAA teams. Mm-hmm. So I've heard this from a number of coaches, that the strength and conditioning is a much easier sell in rugby. Mm-hmm. Than it is with GAA, specifically with the Gaelic. Now, I can't necessarily speak to the magnitude of that, because I haven't worked really with GAA yet. But what I can say, and I think social media probably plays a big part of this too. The girls are very keen to get into the gym, and that's a really brilliant thing to see. Now, for some reason, they don't like it when I take the weights onto the pitch. They didn't like that. No. I don't know why. I did that once. The weights leave the gym and they're not happy. So I don't know why that is. But they're very, very keen in the gym. So I remember the last good session we really got in. I coached them, you know, once a week on the pitch. Then I had them once a week in the gym. And now keep in mind, ordinarily I have full-time college. I normally do security in a couple of nightclubs as well. I have my own clients and my own training. And occasionally, for some reason, I'll think that I can throw a fitness competition in there, which is insane. But one of the girls said to me at the end of the session, she's like, can we do two sessions in the gym every week? And I was just like, this is great, but you're actually going to kill me. Like, I don't know where I could possibly fit this in my week, but I do appreciate the enthusiasm. So, I mean, I think that's really great to see. Now, I think I've been fairly spoilt as well. So working with the Corinthians team, I work with some excellent coaches. I'd say that they're very good communicators, and that's the thing that I've struggled with the most. Mm-hmm. Because getting your point across to a senior men's team, which would typically kind of be the demographic that I'm used to communicating with, or even just, you know, women around my age, and then, you know, coaching the under 18s girls. Now, I'm by no means saying that I have to put things, it's not that they have to be simpler. I mean, part of it, to be honest with you, is just speaking to a team. And just even being on the pitch is something that's been very new for me as well. But the way that you do communicate with younger girls as opposed to older men is a very different method of communication. Mm-hmm. And I do think that I've improved over that, over what's probably getting on the last, you know, eight or so months, mm-hmm. seven months now. I've improved over time, and I think that it's something that you'll only really improve by doing. In terms of their training, to be honest with you, I think they're pretty well rounded. In saying that, though, these are girls that are like multidisciplinary athletes. Like, they're, some of these girls are just so freaking athletic, mm-hmm. you know. So they're very accustomed to being disciplined with their training, and they do take it very seriously. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case necessarily in some of the other clubs. Like I said, I do believe that I've been spoilt.
That's what I was going to say, actually, is so, and this is one that kind of came up earlier on a little bit, but like you mentioned, those girls may have maybe involved in a couple of different other activities. Their general mentality towards training, be it whatever sport they're doing, is quite focused and quite attentive. So they're easier, easier to persuade to get more work done, mm-hmm. and to get more involved in it. Do you think has the general ethos in Corinthians, or has the other coaches, have they helped a lot of the of the attitude of the girls to be that positive and that consistent and interested in training? Or do you think that's just a thing that's going to be happening for women's sports in general, that they're all going to be a little more interested at this point and in future, of just like pushing themselves a little more?
I mean, I'd say it's a combination of both. I mean, and I'm sure you'd agree, I think that women's sport has come, you know, just so far, even in the last five or so years. Now it's still got a good way to come. I mean, I think social media and stuff has had like a huge role to play. I think it's a combination. The coaches that I work with, I mean, they're very professionally well-rounded people. And you know what? They're very good people as well. And I think people really underestimate how just being a good person and having the person first, athlete second approach just how far that goes. Because, you know, even the first session that I had with the girls, you know, I told them, you know, girls, like, I'm no athlete. And, you know, I said at the time, I don't know shit about rugby, you know, and at that time I didn't. Now I have watched a lot of rugby since then, a lot. So, you know, I said to them, you know, I'm here, you know, I'm here to first and foremost, hopefully prevent you from getting injured or like attenuate that best I can. And hopefully to, you know, help your athletic performance. But, you know, I was completely transparent with them. And I said, girls, like, I'm no athlete. I, you know, and this is all new for me. But, you know, I did say to them, I'm going to absolutely do the best that I can for you. Please give me feedback. You know, I'm only there to help those girls. And I think they know that. I hope they know that. So I think, So to come back to your question, I think it's a combination. I think the atmosphere surrounding women in sport is changing. However, I think, you know, the team environment that I'm surrounded by is particularly conducive, to their athletic development, and their development as people. That's the thing too. And the best coaches that I've spoken to always have that person first, athlete second approach. Like Quiver is very, very like that, you know, and I think that she could probably attribute much of her success just to having that attitude about coaching. I think too that it's very easy, especially for me being like a physique and a low-key strength athlete. It's very easy for me to, you know, wanting, you know, get them strong in the gym. But another thing that I've learned from a lot of the brilliant coaches that I've spoken to is that you're there to support the sport. So like, as much as I would love to see these girls squatting 100 kg, and I have no doubt that a lot of them will get there, you know, if we ever open the gym again.
Yeah.
If and when that ever happens.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that they're capable of that, but my role is to support the sport. So I'm very conscious of always keeping that in mind as well. So, you know, I'm here to help them play rugby, and that is what it is.
Yeah, and I think that's I've no doubt lots of other coaches would resonate with that, but I think it's worth mentioning again. I suppose a lot of the time, and especially like considering your like you mentioned yourself, you're going to be down the S&C kind of rabbit hole, and it's a very interesting, I suppose, mentality to have from different sports. So this is where I think it gets really interesting. So like something like soccer for me is always an interesting one, because the highest level teams, I've heard, and we've heard this as well, that some of them do quite very, very, very odd nearly types of training and types of S&C, and or else they don't do any really like high quality stuff at all. Whereas there's other teams that may not be as successful, and they have the most unbelievable S&C setups, and they have this phenomenal regime and the whole lot. And like you mentioned, if you're going into a GAA team, like there's a huge amount of that, obviously, a huge amount of GAA teams, be it Camogie or football or hurling or whatever it is, that are improving an awful lot in their S&C, I suppose, approach. But there's also a huge amount that are extremely naive when it comes to that and what it's for. And like you mentioned, I think one of the best ways of getting any kind of level of buy-in from any of those teams is, like you mentioned, it's literally supporting these sports. So it's number one is injury prevention. Then number two is performance enhancement. So I think a lot of the time it gets looked on as it has to be performance enhancement first, and then injury prevention is a poor second, when it should always be injury prevention first. Because otherwise, if it's just like, so I'll speak from my own perspective, CrossFit wise, and CrossFit gets a fucking really bad name and the whole lot as it is, but it's an interesting sport similar to physique, as in there's it's quite a young sport, but it's also a very overlooked technically sport. because it wouldn't, like, something like football or even rugby, you score or you don't score. So it's like, okay, there's either, it's a very kind of zero-sum kind of game to an extent, whereas CrossFit would be, okay, well, can you do this faster than such and such? There's obviously a racing element to it rather than an actual invasion game element to it, which is quite a different kind of a feel. And then that looks quite different when it comes to the actual type of S&C for it, because like you mentioned, for physique, it's very much subjective on exactly how it's judged. So the winning is like, okay, well, is your bicep a little bit bigger? Well, yeah, you win. That's not the case. So that's another completely different way of looking at that as a sport. But I think in all of those types of ones, be it invasion games, be it CrossFit or be it physique or whatever it is, the number one priority is injury prevention to begin with, because the sport takes precedence. I think that should just be remembered, because it's a hard one, because most of us, and I'm sure you're the same as myself, we love the performance enhancement point of view. We're like, let's go, this is great crack. And we love seeing those results, but the actual time on the pitch or the time in the gym or whatever it is, or on stage or in the competition, is where the actual money really is. And it should be getting the athlete to spend as much time on the floor, on the dance floor, as possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in saying that, though, I think they are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. No, that's true, I suppose. Yeah, I think that's the challenge is there's, and I suppose this goes back towards a little bit, like you'll have, we'd say with something like physios predominantly want to make sure that there's like a very controlled level of adjustment, but they're also like primarily normally building somebody back up in a rehabilitation type of a scenario rather than in an enhancement scenario. And the opposite of that then is your actual, like, you know, your hard tasking S&C coach who wants to just blitz everybody. Or like, you know, they want to force them in the gym, or they want to be like you said, put 100 kilos on all the time and pushing the tempo very, very hard. And there's a tough balance, but like you mentioned, I think probably just the 51-49 at least needs to be the injury prevention to the performance enhancement, probably with a little bit of a back and forth. But I would say especially with the age group that you're dealing with, there has to be some level of making sure that they can actually continuously access their sport rather than not, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, to me, yeah, like I said, I think they're two sides of the same coin a lot of the time. So I'll give you the example of, for example, one of the things that I really drill into the girls is creating intra-abdominal cavity pressure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ability to breathe and brace for a squat. And, you know, for example, like the work of Stuart McGill is a good example. So in resisting spinal flexion, that's one of the best ways that they can protect the spine in a scrum. Mm-hmm. You know, so teaching them something like that. And I think education is huge too. There was probably a point in time where they got tired of me talking, I'm sure. I had to dial that back a little bit, but you know, teaching them to breathe and brace in a squat is teaching them to breathe and brace in the scrum. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, again, you know, like I was saying, that's two sides of the same coin, in the way that, you know, you're going to improve their capacity to produce force, but you're also improving their capacity to protect their spine. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think, you know, when you can find things that you can teach them that have that crossover, I think that's going to be, they're going to be the biggest wins, you know. Mm-hmm. and even just, you know, them having that awareness will go so far. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that would more be the kind of stuff that I want to drill into them. And then if they decide later on they'd like to squat 100 kilos, that's also fine by me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you get good bang for your buck with stuff like that.
But I think that's exactly the point, that rather than being on one side or the other completely and like being on the absolute ends of the spectrum, the absolute gold really is the activities that are going to be applicable for their sport, and they can utilize those. That's why I suppose some of the sports can be looked on as kind of interesting, like something very simple like athletics, where it can be very much, or like we'd say sprinting, it's like from here to here, and then it can get really, really technical within that, and it's about the amount of actual force production to kind of get you going and then get the technique involved. But a lot of the time there needs to be an awareness of, okay, well, if your running style in general isn't very, very good when you're younger, then it's not going to be necessarily be spectacularly good later on. Now, obviously there's outliers at the very top end of the game for all of these things. So we kind of leave them alone, really. This top layer, I like pretty much anything goes with them, because I've seen mad running styles, I've seen amazing running styles or whatever. But when it comes to like that, you mentioned it's something simple that like intra-abdominal pressure, which improves, which can be brought into a lot of different games. So even something like soccer or football or whatever it is, or boxing or anything, that kind of a concept is vitally important to kind of add in. Now, without getting into too much aggressive detail, obviously, with the athletes, because they just need a certain amount of education and then a utilization of it, and then an increased awareness, then utilization and the whole lot. That's where that kind of age group is quite interesting. Have you found much of that with your experience with the men's team, or has it been, is some of that assumed, or is it, let me see how they say it. Or are they, do they take that kind of stuff for granted to an extent? Just because they look at the game in a different way nearly.
So the role that I have with the senior men's team is not nearly so hands-on.
Okay.
I just help with a lot of their warm-up stuff, and I sit in on their sessions and that. But then in saying that, though, obviously because they're not under 18, they haven't had a lot of their sessions. So
yeah.
I haven't really had much of an opportunity to do too much more with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you this, the senior men's team are going to be a lot more fragile than the under 18s girls.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much, because if I was going to do anything like that with them, yeah, I'd have to be much more cautious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these girls are in very good shape and they're young, you know. And this kind of stuff, you know, I would hypothesize would be a much easier sell with them. Mm-hmm. Now, going into the gym might be a bit of a different story.
Yeah.
I think, and yeah, I mean, this doesn't sound great, but if you want to train a senior men's team, you'll want to be able to push some weight. And there's a threshold to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the thing. And I've found that in the gym in general. Now, it just kind of is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're going to teach men to weight train, and I've just found this from having male clients, the best way to get a man to do anything is to have a female do it in front of them first. And it just is, and it's fine, and it works well for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, if you know, I don't know, maybe if I could ever get them in the gym, mm-hmm, like we're saying, if the gym ever does open again, I'd say I probably could do a bit of stuff, mm-hmm, like that with them, and I don't think it would be too much of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the girls are very, very receptive.
Yeah.
And especially because these girls are playing a few different sports,
mm-hmm,
it's an easy sell to their parents.
Yeah.
You know, because the stuff that I'm doing with them, for the most part, will have like a huge transference to any sport that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're very receptive. Not that I'm saying that the men's team wouldn't necessarily be that way, but you can teach these girls freaking anything. They're brilliant.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting, because when you have groups like that, which have obviously multi-talented, and they just had a perfect storm, but like you have an excellent group of people together who have great talents and great interest in that, and they all bounce off each other. Not no disrespect to the men's team, of course, but like any millions of other teams may not have that, I suppose, that connection and that level of interesting kind of I suppose entities within them and identities in the team. So that's where it's very interesting when you get a really, really good team like that with really good attributes, that it has to be about yeah, just kind of letting them go bananas and like that, and pushing them to that good point, but also getting a huge buy-in from the parents. Like that's an ideal time. I'd say if it was a bit younger, you might have either less or more buy-in, dependent on the kind of on the age group and the type of mentality, I suppose, towards. If it's under, like, I'm sure the under 14s and stuff is a little different than the under 18s and stuff. But then also the males end of the sport has a different kind of a look to it. Obviously, there's a huge amount of factors to it, but I think that's probably, that's a good take on it. What have you got planned next coaching-wise, Fiona? Are you looking at going down the hypertrophy route quite hard, do you think? Or are you going to stick with the S&C for a little while? Or is there anything that's kind of popped up in the last a year or so that has taken your interest and you're kind of like, apart from either of those, that you might be like, okay, I'm kind of curious about this a bit more?
For some reason, I like the science of hypertrophy and I like coaching S&C. So I don't.
You don't like the opposite is that too.
Yeah. I'm not sure why. I mean, I see. You know what? You know what I think it is, right? Mm-hmm. Coaching hypertrophy is simple.
Yeah.
It's not rocket science. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly. And I mean, don't get me wrong. Like my training right now, you know, I have a trainer myself. Yeah. And you know, now I kind of he's kind of implemented a. Kind of, it's almost like a block, undulating, you know, linear period. Mine is quite complex. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because I'm so genetically not gifted that at this point you gotta pull out all the cards.
Yeah.
And as well because I've been training for 8 years. Mm-hmm. But for the clients that I get, for the most part, you know, only 1 or 2 years into their training, I mean. You can use a linear model with them for the most part. Yeah. So this is the thing. I mean, the training that I do hypertrophy wise with clients in the gym, it's not complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and to be honest, your average person, you know, there's a threshold to how much they're willing to commit. Like, yeah. You know, let's face it. You tell your average person they need to eat 7 meals a day. They need to train for, you know, 2.5 hours, 6 days a week. Who the fuck no?
Yeah.
You know, like, exactly. So this is the thing. I get better buy-in that way with the girls. Mm-hmm. And because they are such great athletes, you know, the small changes that I would make with them would have a big impact.
Yeah.
Now, if I was, even to be honest with you, if I was to start training fitness competitors, which has never really been my thing for some reason, I don't know what I necessarily enjoy it. For some reason, I like the science of hypertrophy and yeah. I seem to like coaching strength and conditioning. So, I'd say something to do with that is the fact that coaching hypertrophy is almost too close to home for me. You know, yeah. I kind of like to focus on my own. And even that, I got to the point where I was getting my head way too far into my own training, mm-hmm. which is when I hired my coach.
Yeah.
And I think that's certainly an aspect of it. Maybe because I know so much about the science of hypertrophy at this point, I tend to overthink it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was my initial question, you know, getting into strength and conditioning.
Mm.
Can I continue with both? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I can see why there'll be, I can see the attraction of it. Obviously, the S&C is, especially in a team environment, is quite challenging because you have an awful lot of variables within the actual type of training and then within the actual team itself. So like you have a handful of individuals who may have similar problems, but not the exact same issue to deal with. So you have all of these, your challenges are multiplied on a daily basis because of the type of sessions that you would do and the type of activity they would have been doing outside of that, having to cater for it. So whereas, like you mentioned, within a private setting with an individual, like just for some hypertrophy work, it's not very complicated. Like it's kind of a ten a penny once you have a bit of awareness of what's going on. And but also, like you said, it does give you that little bit of distraction, because if you had to go hardcore on the sports science and you were kind of muscle testing and all this kind of stuff, with the particular team, like it's quite a, it becomes a little bit too tightened together, and you can't allow the actual art and the quality of, like you mentioned, the communication and stuff like that to really develop if you are stuck in both kind of camps very, very tightly together. It needs to be that bit of a separated kind of thing, because like you said, it's working on an individual basis and then also very much working on a team basis, because when it comes to any of that hypertrophy, like I suppose the very obvious challenge is something like this. If you have to try and get a team all a bit bigger, a little bit more hypertrophy, like that's quite a challenge because they're all going to be individuals regardless. So you're kind of like, it's, you can't, it's just a natural difference, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in saying that though, I think I do bring something kind of unique to the table in terms of strength and conditioning coaching that way. Coming from more of a background of hypertrophy, and especially coming from a background of physique sport. For example, you know, in terms of, you know, nutrition and hydration and all this kind of stuff, I'd say, you know, I know a lot more about this kind of thing than your traditional S&C coach. Mm-hmm. And you're really assuming that from a personal standpoint, that individuals that you're training for strength and conditioning also don't have physique goals, which a lot of them do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, you know, once you're at a more elite place in sport, I mean, that changes and everything needs to be very, very goal oriented. But at the point that I'm at now, for example, you know, one of the girls contacted me recently and she has, you know, goals which are really just physique oriented. Mm-hmm. And that might be something that your traditional S&C coach, you know, wouldn't be so well equipped to deal with.
Well, that makes a huge amount of sense for a couple of reasons. Obviously, one of the first ones would be any improvement in physique, or at least in confidence levels, would be a knock on into confidence levels and then performance levels on top of that, because of either improved actual efficiency or improved strength, and also improved general confidence in them, in their own ability. But I think that's what you mentioned a little while ago is a big one. And a lot of S&C coaches will likely be underestimating the value that they could bring, the added value they could bring by either becoming a little bit more interested in and understanding more about physique or bodybuilding or hypertrophy or all of these different areas, like you mentioned about hydration and things like that. Like, it's sometimes there can be a separation of the S&C coach and then the dietitian and then such and such and such and such, and you're like, you don't have to have a million person team. You can literally, you should be really trying to generalize a little bit more to make sure that you can manage it better. Obviously, like you mentioned, at a very, very high performance and elite level, yeah, there's a little bit of difference potentially there, but even still, there's a huge amount of scope for coaches to build on their knowledge, like me included. If I'm working with a particular team, I need to be able to become more aware of those types of things. So if I want to improve on my awareness of what types of hydration levels to work on with the team, or if that's a potential issue that I think they might have, then yeah, that's something that I think is underestimated sometimes by coaches, that they kind of stay a bit siloed and can just get wound into that. Okay, well, it's just about this for the sport and this, whereas picking up bits and pieces on a regular basis to add to the toolbox makes a huge difference to the ability of the team to work well.
For sure. And I mean, the more coaches that you bring into that scenario, that's more coaches that, you know, they need buy-in from that team for everyone to be successful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like to think that I have, you know, at least a certain amount of buy-in with the girls that I train. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that I do, because they do come to me on an individual basis as well. So, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I'm kind of a jack of all trades that way for them, I suppose. I know my educational deficits, I suppose. But then in saying that, I think I do bring something unique to the table that way, because there aren't a lot of people that come from a physique background that go into strength and conditioning. So, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. No. And I'll only improve with the strength and conditioning stuff. So, I think there's something there for sure.
Absolutely. All right, Fiona, quick little fire round before we leave you to it. Are you reading anything in particular at the moment that would be of interest to us?
I've actually subscribed. So there's a lad over in the US, and he's started his own website subscription service. This is all completely hypertrophy oriented.
That's okay. It's a place where you can go for hypertrophy.
So it's it's www.scienceofsculpture.com. And he's got some fabulous articles on there. Cool. And I'm really enjoying getting through that. There's a lot of content. It's no BS. Basically just summarizing a lot of the complex, specifically nutritional information surrounding hypertrophy. Mm-hmm. It's very good. I'm very happy with it. I would also subscribe to, I love the Stronger by Science guys. I think I've mentioned that to you before.
Yeah.
I love their podcast, and I subscribe to their mass reviews as well. So I guess, like, for me, you know, while I have a break from college, that's when I really double down on the hypertrophy stuff. Mm-hmm. I get as much in as I can, because I know once college goes back, there'll be none of it.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm at the minute.
Awesome. So I suppose we're recording this while we're in lockdown and the whole lot. Do you have any kind of thoughts, I suppose, on how to manage, any little tips that you find are really helpful for you to manage kind of lockdown craziness? Or is it just read more about hypertrophy that we should do?
Well, I think everyone should be reading more about hypertrophy. Well, in terms of people that don't have gym access, mm-hmm. you know, I got very, very into the blood flow restriction literature at one point. And, you know, I think that is a fantastic modality for people that don't have access to high loads. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you know, the idea behind BFR, although it was brought in initially from a rehab standpoint, is for athletes that are load intolerant. So athletes that have, say, gone through an ACL tear or something like mm-hmm. that, using maybe only 30% of the load that they would normally use, and keeping their muscle mass that way. So I think it's something for people to look into if they're interested in maintaining the muscle mass that they have, but they don't have access to those high loads like they normally would. Maybe they've only got a few kettlebells or can do a few, you know, pistol squats or something like that. The cuffs that I got are the Occlusion Cuffs brand, and they sent me back about €150, but I know you can get cheaper ones than that.
Yeah.
But I think it's certainly worth looking into, especially because gym equipment is kind of in short supply. It was. I can't say whether it is now, but I know it certainly was in short supply at one point. So I think it's worth looking into. And if you're interested in that kind of stuff, there's a lot of research on it. So might be worth looking into.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. I think especially for a lot of coaches, they would be looking for, like, obviously you could do lots of band work and isos and things like that, but something like the occlusion work and the blood flow restriction work could definitely be quite interesting for, like you mentioned, certain athletes that may have to be maybe rehabbing certain injuries or anything like that. That's definitely something that's worth looking at. And like you said, a huge amount of research behind it. So that's a good call on that. Fiona, how can people get in contact with you if they wanted to touch base and kind of listen to more about the amazingness of hypertrophy or your general journey?
I'd say, like, I'm moderately active on Instagram, about as active as I plan on ever being, to be honest with you, which is probably one post every 2 weeks. But people can certainly contact me there. So okay. It's my Instagram is fee_fit. So fi_fit. Or they could contact me at fiona.cashmer@gmail.com. If they have something specific that they'd like to ask, that's fine. But yeah, they're probably the two best places, or I'm usually hanging around Planet when Planet is open. So come in and say hi that way.
Nice. Well, Fiona, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Some really, really interesting bits and pieces there that we talked about. So I say once a massive thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on, Parag. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it's great. We'll have a lovely evening and we'll see you very, very soon.
You too. See you, mate. Have a good one.
All right, folks, you've just been listening to episode number 63 of the Humble Coach Podcast with Fiona Cashmere. Folks, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I want to say a massive thank you to Fiona for taking the time out of her day to join us on the show. It's really, really appreciated. And second of all, folks, I want to say a massive thank you to all of you guys for your continued support of the podcasts. It's really, really appreciated also. Folks, there is going to be some big changes to the look of the podcast over the next number of weeks. So keep an eye out on the social medias for more details on that coming soon. Some exciting changes. But for now, folks, I hope you guys have a lovely day and I'll chat to you very soon.